This kid does something quote unquote bad or some kind of behavior you don't prefer. You're going to add what? Support, encouragement, education, training, everything an adult would want a good leader to do, that we would want a fantastic partner to do for us. That every time will equal better.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. If you have kids, you gotta listen to this show. Today, I have Kyle Wester, who is a pro with helping children and families find happiness. Kyle, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great, Brad. I'm excited to help parents, man. That's a thing that gets me up every morning.
Yeah. I thought years and years ago that I wanted to help children as well. And now I'm helping parents. And by helping parents, it helps the children. So let's jump right in, man, as I always like to do. Your journey from seeing your wife's parenting style as weak to embracing a more empathetic approach is quite transformative. We've talked about this offline. What were the key moments or insights that led to this shift in your perspective?
Man, there was a lot of great conversations, Brad, that my wife and I had along the way. We're both counselors. We're both licensed counselors. We both went through the same training. But as my wife was working with kids who'd been sexually and physically abused, she was learning all of these like amazing tools that were helping parents move away from fear-based, shame-based techniques that a lot of us grew up in our own homes using, right? And she would come home and like give me these little tidbits, and I'd be like, yeah, that's not gonna work. I mean, that's cute that you're doing that at the place you're doing. And I was an elementary school counselor, Brad, and I was thinking, man, if I could just whack this kid, or this kid needs to get really, you know, I was thinking of all these ways we need. And then as I got to know these families, those kids were actually the ones I had the biggest problems with, were the ones living in homes that were pretty scary, that the parents were yelling a lot. There was a lot. So they were coming to school. And so anyway, I would come home, be talking to my wife about this. And it wasn't really a problem, Brad, until we had our own kids. Then as we had our own kids, and then my wife started really putting her foot down. I'm like, she's like, I really don't want a home where you are screaming at our kids all the time, that your main tool is intimidation. I don't want that in our house. And I thought, okay, you're saying that now when they're little because they're sweet and cute and you're good with babies. But as they start to walk and talk and they can actually hit you or yell at you, that's when I'm going to step in. Because I don't know, Brad.
You're going to be needed.
Yes. Yeah. Because I don't know how your upbringing was, Brad. But as I was thinking about this talk this morning, I mean, just we really were kind of a typical home of my mom was the more nurturing person. And if things really hit the fan, there was either an explicit thing said or an implicit that wait till your dad gets home. Right. When dad gets home.
I got that.
Yeah. He's the heavy and then he will dole it out. And my dad could get really mad. He could definitely get really loud and intimidating.
And so could mine. And mine would be hit me with a belt. I can remember, actually, I can't remember. My sister about 5-10 years ago told me that there was a time when I left for school and she says I was probably 5, 6, 7. And I did something that a childlike behavior, right? Whatever I was doing wasn't that bad. Yeah. And she told me that my father said I was going to get the belt when I got home. And I still kind of get choked up about that now, thinking about you're going to tell a child and that child's got to live all day long thinking what he has to face when he gets home. I mean, I want to cry right now thinking about it. So I got that. Yeah. And then when my parents divorced, I would occasionally get the wooden spoon from my mom.
Yeah. Typically what would happen, I knew we were going to get spanked in those kind of situations with the belt. My dad actually for a little bit had a stick that we called Sting, and it was like a balloon stick that you could use. I mean, I think definitely it would be bordering on the line of, you know, getting there. But actually what I learned, Brad, about like 10 or 11, and I tell parents that I'm coaching this, is I learned pretty quick that getting slapped was better than getting spanked, because I realized that getting spanked, there was this freedom that he felt to just spank as many times as he needed to. But if he slapped me, it was simply just one slap across the face. So I would say something. I remember a moment when I figured this out where he was telling me about my room and he wanted my room clean and I hadn't cleaned it. And he kept reiterating to me that it was important to clean this room. And I could tell in his eyes, he's about to threaten to spank me. So I thought, man, if I could just get him to slap me, then this would be done. So then I looked him I looked him in the face and said, have you seen your room? Are you serious? It's that important to you? Right. And then he slapped me across the face. And then that gave me a chance to look back at him and say, that feel better? here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to my room and I'm going to model how to clean it. And then I went back and cleaned the room. And it was there I started realizing, Brad, that my dad, he didn't have any skills given to him, right? I mean, he had multiple dads as a kid. He never really had any parent, any dad really love him or take care of him. And I knew then that my dad couldn't control himself. So if I could figure out how to control him, then I had control of the situation, right? And so that was kind of like my child. So when we were having kids, you can imagine, Brad, I'm still, even though I hated that, like I didn't think that was great. I didn't want to repeat that. So many times I'd be like, I'm going to do it better than my dad. But as I had my own kids, I'm like, crap, the only tools I have are the ones he gave me. So I am thinking, I'm going to need to spank them. I'm going to need to, if it comes down to it, I think I totally gave away the slapping part, but I'm thinking I'm definitely going to need to spank them. I'm definitely going to need to do some kind of like timeout, some kind of control kind of mechanism, right? But then my wife is over here loving the kids and not wanting to do any of that. And I'm just thinking, what? How is this going to work? Like all hell's going to break loose in this family if I don't come in as the heavy.
Incredible. Yeah, we're going to talk about control in a couple minutes, but you said something that I can't wait to touch on in a couple minutes on that control aspect and how children try to control their environment. So were there key moments though in your shift?
Did something happen? Yeah, well, in the key moments was, I mean, there was a few little ones along the way where I definitely could see that my wife and I were starting to have some conflict, especially when my oldest got to be about three and we had a second kid. And so when it was just one kid, it was kind of like mostly if I felt myself getting triggered, I could just walk away and let my wife take care of it. And then she could do whatever she wanted to do. But then when we had two, I really needed to be much more involved. And now those deficiencies, those weaknesses in me really became more apparent. So I was able to actually go to this great conference in Florida. And I went there just as a school counselor to learn better how to help other kids, not my own, but just help other kids. And so when I'm there, oh my gosh, Brad, I start learning about the brain science and just how the brain, what it does in fear, Brad, that when we are scared, change doesn't happen in fear. It just actually reinforces the negative patterns we already have going on in us, right? And so that when you are afraid, you're not learning and growing, you're just learning how to survive. And then I looked at the brain, what it looks like when it feels safe and loved. And it's amazing. Like when you feel safe and loved, like you're ready to grow and change. You're ready to learn. Like you're just like an open book. You're able to look at situations with an open hand rather than a closed fist. And I called my wife in tears and just told her, it's going to change, honey. Like this is going to change. I'm not going to have a home where my kids are scared of me because I want them to be better than me. And the only way for them to be better than me is to not use fear. If I use fear, they are destined to repeat my same mistakes and the same mistakes my dad made.
How did she respond? Did she believe you?
Oh, yeah. She was just like, to her, it was an answer to prayer. Because at that point, and I run into a lot of moms like this, Brad, where this kind of stuff happens. She had been wondering, like, one, do I want to have any more kids with this guy? Because like, wow. I love him, but I am not going to have a home filled with yelling and fears and threats. And then two, she was thinking, I don't know how long this marriage can last. If we're going to go down this route, she just was really, I mean, with all the work she had done helping all these parents in serious traumatic situations, Brad, and our kids weren't going to be seriously traumatized. Like there wasn't going to be sexual or physical abuse in our home. And so if she's helping those parents, she just couldn't let that go. Why do we need to do this if they don't need to? And so yeah. I love that about my wife. And I know you have a fantastic partner as well of just, she thought it could be better and she was going to insist upon that. And so it just, when I came home, she was so excited and we immediately just, instead of doing this all the time, you know, just hitting heads, we joined hands. And from then, not only has it been fantastic with the kids in many ways I never expected, but the marriage is that much deeper, more intimate and closer together because we're on the same page about how to love these little human beings.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. There's like hours of questions I could ask you here. So I'm going to ask you if you changed, but I want to first, you touched on something about fear that's really interesting. At this conference, you learned that when your brain is in fear, you can't change. What can you do when your brain is in fear, right? Yeah. Other than kind of survive and run, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're listening to this, you're likely an adult.
Yeah.
There is a good chance that you are living in fear right now and don't even know it because I think a majority of human beings live in a fight or flight state. Yeah. We're supposed to live in a fight or flight state, I think like 10% of the time. Yeah. And I think it's flipped.
Yes.
I think we're more like 70, 80%.
Yeah.
So you can't do a whole lot in fear. Yeah. So if you're saying, huh, that's not me, I'll give you a little quiz to take. If you go to bradchandler.com/quiz, take that quiz. And if you score lack of self-love or mild self-love, I can promise you that you were living in fear because you're in a fight or flight mode. So yeah. And any comments on what can you do with fear and survive?
Well, even I want to share a story that backs that up too, Brad. I remember when this hit me, there was a key moment as I'm trying to make these changes. And initially it was mostly like, stop yelling. That was the big thing. It was like, stop being scary and mean. I mean, this is a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old. Like, good Lord, Kyle, you don't need to intimidate this little kid. And yet that's all I had in my wheelhouse. That's, you talk about childhood programming. That's all that was given to me, was like, you must intimidate the other human to then do what you want. So I remember there was a moment where my daughter Abby, when she was maybe like 4, she was throwing a tantrum. And I'm sure anybody who's had little kids will be in this moment where she's on her back, kicking her feet. And like, as I sat with her and I'm trying to like, Kyle, remain calm. So as she sees, I look at her and she looks like she wants to kick me. And I said, you better not kick me. And I thought, I need to set some healthy boundaries with her. And as I did that though, as I know now, any kid will go, huh, that's interesting. I wonder what will happen if I do that. So then she got closer and closer and closer. And I could feel the anger and really the fear rising. Like, the fear is, what do I do if she does this? Like, I can't let that happen. I can't let her cross that line. And so then she does. She kicks me right with her heel on the side of my leg. So I went back to my old childhood programming. I grabbed her and I said, you will not do that. Do not kick me. And for a minute there, this is what fear does. Fear will go, look, it worked. Because she immediately like froze. And I was like, ha, see, fear ain't that bad. It works just fine. But then the rest of the day, I noticed she wasn't quite herself with me. And I was like, man, I need to go back and repair this. And I did. And then at night, I wanted to follow up with something that really hurt that she said. And what she said when she was throwing the tantrum was, I love mom more than I love you. And so as I'm putting her to bed that night, I say to her, I say, hey, Abby, that thing you said today, did you mean that? And then she said something really interesting, Brad. And this is, I'm so thankful for my daughter and her insight. And she looked at me and said, hey, Dad, I love you sometimes, but sometimes I don't. I know it's confusing. And I didn't know what to do with that. So I just sat there. I just received it, just held it kind of in my thoughts for a moment. And as I was climbing down her ladder from her loft bed, I felt something say, she's just repeating what you said to her. Mm. That love is a token that you will trade for good behavior, that you will take it away as quickly as you give it. And you're teaching her now at this young age that this is what we do with love. We trade it for you being the human I want you to be. If you are, I'll dole it on you. I'll pour it on you. I'm sure you have felt that, Brad, before, where like when the kids are doing exactly what I want, I just want to like throw love on them. I'm like, you want to go get ice cream? You want to do whatever? Like, but when they aren't acting the way I want, I'm like, okay, no ice cream today. No, so you immediately want to pull all that stuff that they think is very loving away from them in order to control them. And I
conditional love.
Totally. And that's where I thought, is that, do I think love is conditional or unconditional? What do I want it to be in my home? I want it to be unconditional. So it isn't just about not yelling. It isn't just about not intimidating. It's actually like what my daughter did was she expanded my understanding of what it meant to be loving in these conflictual moments.
So did you ever tell her that you were going to only love her at certain points in time?
No, she totally, that's what I'm saying. Like, these stinking kids are so smart. Like, I didn't need to tell her that. She got it from my actions. That's never something I would say to my kids because that's so toxic, but I sure was non-verbally saying it all the time.
Sure. So Kyle, it's the same thing that you and me and your daughter and every other human being on this planet does, is they create a meaning around something.
Yeah.
So that meaning that love is conditional, had you not addressed that, that would be programmed into her implicit memory, buried in her subconscious mind, and then through all of her relationships for the rest of her life, she would have to believe that because that's what her mind believed, right?
Totally.
That could turn into codependency. Totally. It could turn into anxiety. It could turn into, that is the crux of pretty much every psychological issue on the planet, is we form a meaning, which they call a schema, and that meaning drives behavior, anxiety, drinking, whatever, because that behavior is actually, the brain is telling them that if I can be anxious or drink or gamble or be addicted to work, even though it's bad for me, it's less painful than what I learned in childhood, that love is conditional.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is go back and figure out that, wait, was that really true?
Yeah.
no, it wasn't true. And then boom, as soon as you can do that, all of those quote symptoms, the anxiety, the drinking, the sex, the work addiction, they just go away, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing.
You know what else it leads to is that's where all the sibling conflict comes from too. Is those men.
Yeah.
Like really, I'm just telling your audience and telling you, our siblings don't deal with sibling jealousy or sibling rivalry. That's just not something in our home because love is freely given. It's not something they have to put somebody else down to get, or they're not competing with their brother and sister to somehow get more of our love. It's always freely given, not because of what they've done, because of who they are, because they're ours, because they're our kids. And so every day it's there. If they want it, we just pour it on them. So they're not fighting each other. So I think that's a real outcome I never expected, Brad. The way the siblings treat each other. I mean, I remember one time, just as a blow your mind moment, is I'm sitting at Panera and I had like a free cookie. And I get this free cookie and I'm hanging out with my son. He's like 5 years old at this point. And I say, hey, son, I don't want the cookie. You can have the cookie. And he said, cool. Can you cut that in half? And I said, why? I want to give the other half to my sister. I want to give it to Abby. And I'm like, okay. Wow. So I cut it. And then he goes, hey, sir, I didn't cut it right down the middle. It's kind of uneven. He's like, yeah, I'm going to give the bigger side to Abby. And I was like, wow. What? Like if when I was a sibling, when I was little, I would have eaten that cookie, come home, rubbed it in my brother and sister's face that dad gave me a cookie. But I was like, this is the fruit of what we're producing, is they're constantly thinking not only of themselves and what they want, but also about the other and about how much they love and care for their siblings. It's awesome.
So Kyle, as a kid who got smacked in the face and instigated his father to smack him in the face so he didn't get something worse. Isn't that funny? We just talked about like symptoms to protect something worse. You were doing that as a very young age. So you obviously have these meanings that have controlled your life to some degree. Through this work and through this epiphany and going to this conference, have you changed as a human being?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, with each of the kids, I tell them this constantly, about how they have expanded me and my understanding what it means to be a human, about what it means not only to be a dad, but what it means to be a husband, what it means to be a man, what it means to be an entrepreneur, whatever the thing is, right? And the way they've expanded me is they've helped me see the world in a way I didn't see it before. Like I was raised, Brad, and the world was basically something I needed to fight against. I was constantly resisting it. Like from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep, you're in a battle. You're in a battle for your finances. You're trying to get the money you need. You're in a battle for the relationships. You're working hard to make sure you earn their love and you're able to make sure your wife still likes you and the kids are halfway enjoying you, right? That's how I imagined life would be because that's how it was for my parents. It was a constant struggle. And when I watched my kids, as I was open and receptive to engaging them and where they were at, they just didn't see the world that way. They saw the world as something to be explored, something to be enjoyed. Like it actually would piss me off. Like we'd be taking a walk around the block and I was like, okay, I'm taking a walk around the block. Let's go. And my kids kept stopping constantly to look at bugs, to like smell flowers. I'd be like, what are we doing here? Let's go on a walk. Because in my mind, that's how life is. You set a goal, you go after it, just go and you fight. Let's get going. You know? And like the kids were like, I don't want to do that. Like we'll do the walk. But I think along the way, there's tons of stuff to be enjoyed. So in that sense, they have completely changed. Like I seriously wake up every day with that childlike excitement about what the day has for me and my family, because it's chock full of it.
So when events happen in our lives as a child, when we determine meaning, we make a meaning about ourselves. So when your dad slaps you, there's a meaning about Kyle, which is probably Kyle's not good. Yeah. Then Kyle places a meaning on people in general. People treat me this way. And then there's a meaning about the world. That is when your brain is forming. Yeah. Those are things that like, this is how I survived the world. If you want to know why, like we have prisons full and people, huge obesity rate and addictions and marital problems, it's all right here. This is why I get so passionate because it can all be fixed so easily.
Yeah.
So Kyle, what do you do with children now?
Well, so now what happens is lots of times people will seek me out because they're having a problem, right, in their relationship with their kids. So here I have an office here in Tulsa where I do meet with kids, right, and I do help them. But every time, I never meet with the kid first. I always meet with the parents first. And I'm actually really excited when after this first meeting, lots of times the parents will say, I actually don't need you to meet with my kid because I can see how you can help us. And that's when I'm like, yes, this is going to go so fast because the parent understands the six-year-old kid ain't changing this. The six-year-old kid may need some support. Maybe we need to help that kid get that. But really what that six-year-old kid is just, they need some encouragement. They just need to know they're not alone in this while their parents are switching and changing this. And really what I'm helping them change in just simple terms is I'm wanting them to move away from this equation. I think a lot of parents don't even realize they're doing this equation. And the equation in simple terms is this. If anyone's listening, they can even write it down. Is kid does something bad, and then you add something that hurts them, or they don't like it, or it's something that they definitely don't want to enjoy, and that's going to equal good. And that equation does not work. I mean, it's simple, Brad. We were growing up, two wrongs don't make a right. Two bads don't make good. So instead, the equation I want them to switch to is kid does something quote unquote bad or some kind of behavior you don't prefer. You're going to add what? Support, encouragement, education, training, everything an adult would want a good leader to do, that we would want a fantastic partner to do for us. That every time will equal better. And so, man, it's so fun. If I am seeing a kid, Brad, especially like a kid who's 10 on up, I put that equation up there. A lot of the kid will be confused. They'll be like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Why, when I mess up, do you hurt me and become better? And like the kid was like, many times kids like, I was already beating myself up. And going back to that childhood program you're talking about, Brad, is that's the equation we use on ourselves. Is we mess up, we do something that we think is bad, or maybe we're too lazy or too rude, or we just yelled at our kids and we're trying to change that. So then we add, do something bad to myself, hurt myself, talk to myself in negative ways, punish myself, and whatever, because that's going to equal good. Why would I do that? Because in no other relationship do I want that to happen. That's because I was trained from the time I was a little kid, in order to get better results, you have to beat the crap out of yourself to get it. And it's not true.
Yeah. Yeah, another meaning, right? Mm-hmm. Another flawed meaning that you put on yourself. And Dr. Gabor Mate says that kids only misbehave for one reason. They lack connection. So when you go to punish them or put them in time out or hit them, what are you doing? You are furthering the disconnect. Yeah. And as adults, our disconnection to ourselves is at the essence, again, of every addiction problem and every anxiety, depression, you name it, OCD. It's a lack of connection to ourselves.
Brad, going back to the connection, I had a kid tell me this who was in their 20s now, and they're super anxious and they're really unwilling to, it's hard for them to ask for help. They think it's all on them. And as we kind of went through this, she was telling me, I remember at 4, the first time my parents put me in timeout. And I remember thinking, as I was in my room, just overwhelmed with these feelings, I didn't know what to do with them. I remember thinking, oh, they're saying it's my job to fix it. It's my job to fix it. Right? Yeah. And that's where they started getting this story in their head that you're not supposed to reach out for help for this stuff. You're supposed to just fix it on your own. And here she is, 20 years old. She was valedictorian of her high school class. She had a full ride to her college, and she's paralyzed because she's overwhelmed with the stress of her situation. And she doesn't know how to ask for help. Because when she did, she was told to go away and fix it herself.
So her anxiety is protecting her from that pain. Yep. She was forced to almost be an adult as a child.
Yes.
When you're given a role that you cannot accomplish as a kid, what's the message that you're giving yourself? Something must be wrong with me. I can't do this. I'm supposed to figure it out, but I can't.
Yeah.
So, man, fascinating stuff. Yeah, I have this saying that if you have kids with behavioral problems and you want to know the cause, just grab your spouse by the hand, walk into the bathroom and look in the mirror. And notice that I said cause. Yeah. I didn't say it's your fault because it's not your fault. Just like it wasn't your fault, Kyle, and it wasn't my fault that I created two kids with anxiety. It was the way, it was these meanings that I placed on my childhood that subconsciously, just like you said, pushed your kid to think she only got loved at certain times.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things to do with my kids to help change that is, Brad, I teach parents to do this a lot because I'm trying to be really conscious of the story that I'm passing on to the kids, is the goal isn't to be a perfect parent. Because like you said, even what you're saying, it is to own and take my responsibility of the part I've played, but it isn't to be perfect. It is to be honest about the stories that are driving your behavior. And so what I started doing when they were really young is after I did blow up and I did yell and spoke to them in a way that I would never want them to speak to me, which is very hypocritical of me. But so I would go back to them and say to my kids, hey, dad just got really upset. Was that anger that I expressed, was that about you or was it about me? And my kids, every time when they were younger, would say about them, every time. And I would say to them, it was not about you. My feelings are always about me. So my anger is about me. Can I tell you what it says about me? And the kids would go, what? They'd be like super interested. It tells you that I'm afraid. In that moment, I yelled at you because I was afraid I was losing control. In that moment, I was yelling at you because I felt powerless and I was fearful that I had no more influence on you. So I was going to make you listen to me and I was going to show you that I can have influence on you by being bigger and louder. And my kids would go, Dad, you don't need to do that. we listen. We care what you have to say. I know you do. It just in that moment, fear told me you didn't because you weren't responding like that. You didn't do exactly what I said when I said. And in my mind, in my little story, it's like, that's how love is. Love does exactly what when I say it, you do it, which is very gross because that would never, if my wife did that, I wouldn't think that was very loving. I think that'd be like, oh, my wife is like, being very codependent on me. So instead, like I wanted to free them from that story. So they always knew that this moment was just about me. And the reason why I want that, Brad, is I want them as they're growing older, that when they're getting mad at me, they can reflect and say, wait, that doesn't have to do with Dad. That has to do with me. And what does it say about me? And then they can start learning from these moments.
That was a mic drop moment right there. So if your kids drive you crazy, if they make you angry, if they make you pause for a second, they cannot make you angry. You are angry or sad or frustrated because of the way that you feel about yourself or because of the meaning that you're placing on that. When you say you're fearful, Kyle, is there a chance that you're fearful that their actions are proving that the meaning that you place on yourself of maybe I'm not enough is coming to fruition?
Almost every parent I help, Brad, then they come in and they're like telling me about all these things their kids are doing they want to change. And inevitably, by the end of the session, when they are crying, they will say, you know what I'm most afraid of is that they're going to become just like me. And that's when I say, why would being like you be so bad? Why would that be so bad?
Yeah.
And that's what's causing all of the conflict is the parent is afraid that they're passing on all of the worst parts of them to their kid.
Yeah. So let's get to the control because I love what you brought up earlier. So kids often blame themselves for parents' conflicts, arguments, fighting, and the divorce. Why do children do this? And how can parents address this misconception, ensure their children feel secure and loved regardless of what's going on at home?
Well, and I love that. When we talked earlier, I shared this quote that I got off a TED Talk by Dr. Becky Kennedy that I really enjoyed. And she took it from another psychologist. I can't remember his name right now, but I love the quote because I thought it's so, because I used to think it was just because kids are egocentric, right? That kids just want, they blame everything on themselves. And to some extent, that's true because their world is kind of small. So when I'm helping kids, the parents are getting divorced. I'm helping the kids typically will blame themselves for the divorce. But what was interesting, the quote that she had was, kids would rather be a sinner in a world ruled by God than live in a world ruled by the devil. And what that quote is saying is, it's actually safer for the kid to believe they are the bad one. And you are the good one.
Can you say that again, Kyle?
So that I'd rather be a sinner living in a world ruled by God than live in a world ruled by the devil. Because you see how it's not safer. If the kid thinks they're doing the good and you're doing the bad, their world is going to be very unsafe. So it's better to think I'm the evil one and you're the good one. Now, what we help parents do is dispel those two dichotomies. If this isn't a moment where one of us is good and one of us is bad. It's just, we're both trying to figure out how to do this moment better. So really, that's what I was doing. In that moment, in that talk I had with the kids, it was to release them from the fact that they control me. They don't control me. I control me. And if I control me, they can control themselves too. And so that's the beautiful thing of a brand. You raise these human beings who don't feel out of control all the time and then need to control everything around them. They instead know how to control themselves, to regulate that fear. So then they can get to the best part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, and really then be the human being they intended to be. Like when I'm yelling at my wife, I don't want to be that human. When I'm yelling, I'm begging for somebody in that moment to help me like shift it.
So Kyle, why is it so bad if a child looks at their parents and says, oh, they are bad and it's their problem?
Well, oh, you say if the kid thinks that of their parents?
Yeah, what you just said. Because, why is that bad?
Well, because then now every morning you're going to wake up anxious and afraid about like these parents that you can't trust. Like the very basis of childhood is feeling trust, connection, and security with those who are taking care of you. And if that starts to get shaken, that's going to lead to a very unsafe world for you, right? And so that's where almost to a T, by the time they get to me as teenagers, I mean, like, it's crazy, Brad. By the time they're teenagers and I'm talking to them, these kids get no credit for anything good. They only get credit for all the bad. So if their parents are pissed, it's because they did something. If their parents are having a great day, it's not because of what they did. It's probably because they didn't piss them off that day. You know, it's kind of like, that's all the credit because they've got this language to where they notice their power is only to disrupt their parents, because they've seen their parents come home and have crappy days and they couldn't seem to change it. They couldn't seem to make their parents' day better. But if their parents were having a great day, they sure as anything could mess that up, because the parents will say that I was having a great day today until you did that, or we wanted to go have a fun day today and you're messing it all up. But he was never like, honey, I was just having the worst day today and your hug changed everything. Like, they really don't hear that often.
Yeah. So another thing is, and this gets to the control part, if the parents are the problem, then they lack complete control and they cannot control anything. Yeah. If it's their problem and they can just be better, then they can get the love from their family. So going full circle back to the comment where you ask your dad, you instigated your dad to slap you instead of spanking you. That gave you a level of control, right? Yes.
Well, and therefore I felt more powerful. Yeah. And there's a lot of stories I share about my dad in that sense. But I do love when I'm working with parents, Brad, and they come in, and typically throughout that first session, as we're talking about the brain and how interpersonal neurobiology works, how we, and all these kind of stories are formed, they'll say to me with a little fear in their eyes, they'll say, so you're saying I'm the problem, right? And then I will pause and say, are you going to get mad at me if I say yes? And I'll say it not in a shaming way. I'm saying, if I'm not part of the problem, then I can't be part of the solution. Like, it's really freeing when I know the hangups my kids have are a result of things I have modeled and done with them, right? Yeah. Because then, oh my gosh, then I can change all that. And then in that, and I really am a big believer of this, Brad, is that's the beauty of having kids, is so many of those hangups we have, I never would face them. I would never choose it because they'd be too scary if I didn't first see them in my kids. Then when I saw them in my kids, Brad, I'm like, okay, something needs to be done here. I'm going to need to do something about this. And then this is the beauty of how relationships work. In the, as I'm loving my kid through that very thing that I have given to them, that very hangup that I have passed on, as I love them and I journey with them through healing that, I actually am loving myself and journeying to healing with myself. And so it's really cool how the kid becomes this conduit in healing you. And it's actually what the kid wants. The kid wants you to be a healthier and whole human being. And they would love to be an instrument of healing rather than an instrument of torment and hurt in your life.
Yeah. So if you have kids with behavioral problems and there's chaos in your house, just know it's not your fault. It's not your fault because you didn't have the awareness, at least till today when you listen to the show. Now, if you keep doing the same behavior and don't change, maybe it is your fault, but there is a better way. Yeah. There's a way out of this that doesn't take years of therapy. Yeah. Kyle and I both have quite amazing methods for turning around things in a quick way. Yeah. So as we end, could you give us kind of a quick story of like a super cool client success story that you've...
Yeah. Well, you asked me this before when we talked, and I'm saying, there's so many, Brad. I'm thinking of so many dads, right? But here's to me what success looks like, is a lot of times dads have gotten this message that they can't do what was done before. Like, lots of dads now, lots of wives are like, listen, there's a way to do this better. So lots of dads will come and they'll start working with me and they'll be like, okay, I'm going to stop yelling. I'm going to be more intentional about connection. And we'll be doing some of these skills I teach them, right? And so I remember this one dad just recently, I was having coffee with him. He was telling me about this. And he was saying, man, Kyle, I've been doing all this stuff you've been telling me. But you know what will happen is I will purposely say, okay, my kids keep wanting to spend time with me. I'm going to stop at 5 o'clock. I have a home office. I'm going to go downstairs. I'm just going to love on my kids. And he's like, you know what happened though? It really surprised me. He was like, man, I went downstairs and they were down there making pizza with my wife. And I start jumping in and I immediately start cutting the pizza, right? And like, my four-year-old is mad that I'm not cutting it right. So he starts hitting me. And then I'm like, what are you doing? Right. And I immediately, the triggers in my head of like, he can't do this to me. I can't. So I start yelling and he's like, Kyle, pretty soon everybody ends up crying. It's like, it was like, it sucked, dude. It sucked. But then he told me, here's where the success came in, Brad, was in the follow-up. Like, he's like, Kyle, I remembered I wanted to beat myself up all night. I wanted to tell myself how I sucked as a dad. Like, I was telling myself, why did you ever stop at 5? You should have just kept working. It's the story. The script was, the kids are better off without me here. I should just keep doing what I do best, which is work and make money or whatever, right? Support the family. And so he was battling with that story, but he was able to, through the coaching, not believe that story is true anymore. And he's able to engage the four-year-old that evening to be able to hug him, to be able to hold him and do exactly what I said of the whole idea of, hey, my anger isn't about you. I was scared. I was scared that maybe you guys don't want me around, right? And the kid was able to say, Dad, I do want you around. Really, all I was saying was you just weren't cutting it right, and I just wanted you to cut it different, right? And so I think for me, for dads and moms, Brad, I never am going to tell them how I'm going to create this scenario where you become this parent who never messes up, because I think that's gross. Yeah. And I don't think it's helpful to your kids, because your kids are going to mess up. So what I love to do is I love this dad's intent. He's changing some habits, but then he's like, he still needs some work. But even when he messed up, the real work happened after the mess up too. It was like the only way he could have a successful time going down in that moment and changing it was through that connection later, where he repaired it and he got rid of the toxic stuff that happened between him and his four-year-old. And so that four-year-old, Brad, I don't know if at four you ever had that moment with your dad. I'm going to tell you too, that I never had that moment with my dad. I never had a follow-up conversation where dad came back and we learned how to grow and be better humans.
No, and I was too scared of my father to ever put a hand on him. Oh my God.
Even my dad would say, even if we came back, he's like, he might say, hey, okay, I spanked you. Maybe you didn't do the thing I thought, but you probably deserved it for something else. So it was even that. There was never an admission. So what I love seeing is dad's understanding that courage is vulnerability, that these little kids will forever, that four-year-old will remember how strong his dad looked when he came back and was vulnerable with him.
Yeah. So we've got to wrap, but as we've talked a number of times about spanking kids, and I want to give you my stance, and I think you agree with this, Kyle, is that spanking your kids, hitting your kids, laying your hands on your kids is not a good idea. And if you're doing it, please consider stopping. You are, as a parent, your responsibility is to see, hear, understand, and protect your child. And when you hurt them, you're literally shaming them and creating physical and mental harm. So if you're hitting your kids or even putting them in timeout, consider taking a different route. So Kyle, where can people reach you? And are you only working with people in Tulsa or are you doing this nationwide?
No, I'm doing this all over the world and have several families all throughout the world that I'm coaching. And so they can reach me by just emailing me at kylewester@parentinglegacy.com. And of course, I know down in the scroll below, you have the website there, or they can also call me. So my number is 918-984-1555. And so they can give me a call. And then what I'd love to do is give the parents the tools that they're like, how do I do this? I don't have the tools. And it really is as simple as somebody coaching you through that. And really, I mentioned this to you, Brad, if I can say this last thing, I feel like with every parent I help, I'm really like an answer to prayer to my 10-year-old self, meaning 10-year-old me. I think my dad desperately wanted to be a better dad, a better parent, my mom as well. And I think at 10, I just wish somebody would have come alongside them and helped them be able to be that parent that they desired to be, but nobody did, or my parents weren't open to that, right? And so I really think every parent I'm helping, there is a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old little kid saying, somebody please come help my parents be the parents they want to be. So I'd love to talk to those parents.
Yeah. So Parenting Legacy, you can find them. Mm-hmm. So and again, if you're struggling with kids, you're probably struggling with yourself and you may not know it. So if you want to check the barometer on that, just go to bradchandler.com/quiz. And if you lack self-love or have mild self-love and your kids have behavioral problems, it's a good indicator that you need to do some work. And Kyle can help you with that.
If they want to check out the podcast, it's The Art of Raising Humans. So that's the podcast.
Oh, yeah, awesome. Yeah. Kyle, thanks for being on the show. That was freaking great.
Thank you, Brad.
That concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. I'm on a mission to help 1 million people change their life and find the freedom and happiness that they deserve. So I need your help. If you can please share this, rate this, review this, anything you can do to help me get this message out, I would forever be grateful. Love heals all. Take care, guys.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.